Thank you for downloading this week's episode in the Harm Reduction Coalition podcast series. My name is Alan Clear. I work for the Harm Reduction Coalition. I'm here with Dr. Sharon Stancliffe, who's our medical director. And we're going to just do a quick conversation around Philip Seymour Hoffman, who passed away this weekend of what looks like a drug overdose in New York City. And Facebook and Twitter went kind of crazy. Everyone I seem to know commented on it, and lots of diverse opinions on the situation and him dying and how he might not have died and recovery and treatment and what we need to do. And I thought we would just have a quick conversation to acknowledge his passing and also what our response is. And I was more shocked in some ways by his death than many other people's, because I admired him as an actor. I thought he was a really good artist, and he made brave choices in his movies, and his movies were always interesting, often interesting and challenging. And it is such a sad thing that someone of great talent dies in such an accident. So anyway, hi Sharon, how are you? How did you feel when you found out?
Well, when I found out, I'm not very good at name recognition, so I had to find out who it was, wondering if this was going to be somebody close to one of my friends. So that's sort of a mixed emotion. And then I understood we've really lost a really great person. And I guess I jumped to some conclusions that, like many people that have money and are celebrities, that perhaps he didn't get the best drug treatment out there. I don't know if that's the case, but that's the conclusion I leapt to and felt rather angry about it.
Yeah, and what we know about the situation is that he apparently died. He was found by himself. He'd been injecting. I just read in the New York Post that they found 70 bags of heroin there, which is quite a lot. And as far as we know, he was alone at the time that he died. And we do know that he'd struggled with his alcohol and drug use back when he was, in his early 20s, and that he went into treatment. He had some, whatever we want to call, long-term recovery, got involved in pills and switched to heroin. Anyway, so that was his story. And then there was this big response to it. So let's have a quick conversation about that. Being by himself, naloxone wouldn't necessarily have helped, would it?
It would not have helped. I've heard of a few cases, but this is not one of the cases where I could possibly imagine it helping. However, maybe if when he was in his various drug treatment programs, naloxone was something that they talked about and gave out, maybe he would have had a little bit more education and understanding of what put him at risk of overdose. So the naloxone wouldn't help, but the education that goes with handing over a concrete intervention might have.
Yeah, so point number one is, if someone is in treatment, the treatment industry in general needs to be realistic about what happens when someone leaves treatment, and needs to be responsive to their aftercare in terms of preparing them around, how to prevent an overdose, what to look for in their own lives, and how to respond if they're in a situation where someone else overdoses. And, I think that what we've also heard in general is those people who have naloxone, even though they don't use it, are actually more cautious around the way they use their opiates as well. So it would be great to have naloxone kits being given out by treatment programs, especially if you've gone in there and you have an opiate habit. You might not relapse, but it's not much of a burden to have a naloxone kit in the house, is it?
Absolutely not. And actually, in New York, we have quite a number of drug treatment programs that Harm Reduction Coalition has worked with that are handing it out. One therapeutic community, Samaritan Village, gives it out during orientation. They know people leave them and they want them back alive. Others give it out at the end of treatment. And the message is not just, well, you might relapse and we want you to live, which is a wonderful message in and of itself, but also we think that you're a citizen that can save somebody else's life, which to me is a very positive message to someone who's felt the need to be or been forced into drug treatment.
That's right. And Bill Matthews, that works here, he was on a drug treatment program he's been working with, and it's taken them 2 years to get anywhere near doing some of this education and prescribing. And I think that is one of the things here, that there is an urgency related to responding to overdose, and you can't take 2 years to begin to develop programming to respond to it. And we'll get back to that later, I think. The fact that you know, I saw a lot of stuff on Facebook from people I know that they knew him back in the day. So, you know, talking about recovery, and, you know, I've spent quite a bit of time in 12-step meetings, and you often hear people relapsing and coming back and saying it took a lot longer to get back than they had wanted to take, and that they were grateful to be back. And everyone in the room is grateful that they're back too. But there is this internalized sense of failure and shame related to drug use, and like you set yourself your own goals around abstinence, and then you can't hold to it, and you feel so bad. And that is something that's pretty germane here too, I think, or not knowing enough about Philip Seymour Hoffman, I can't speak for him. But for many people who have been in recovery, using again after a period of time, feel it's very secretive. And for someone as famous as him, it must be even harder.
Absolutely. I mean, our messages don't use alone, but so often when people relapse, they don't want anybody but, I guess, the person they bought the drugs from to know about it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, and it's not just that we'll stigmatize and yell at them. It's painful to know that somebody you love is doing something that dangerous. So they want to hide it from us, and we don't necessarily want to know. So it's not just negative stigma. It's carrying on into a place where it doesn't help, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but when I find out someone I'm close to is injecting, I then worry, even when they say, you know, I'm going to get high this weekend. And I'll ask, what are you going to do? And they're going to get high. And I'm like, I will worry if I don't see them on Monday morning at the right time. I start to panic. That's what I just do. I mean, not panic. Well, I get concerned. And I think that's very human. But it is sort of something we, even though as uncomfortable it is, we do need to express that caring and ask for that information as well, I think.
Yeah, and steel ourselves to the feeling that we don't want to know because we're in denial. But I think that's a really hard one, and I think that's pretty incredible that you've got people sometimes telling you about their use over weekends when you care about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally is. And it's a really tough thing because it's not just... it's not simple. It's not just about let's have a public dialogue about stigma and shame. These are really, really worrying situations that, you know, that we find ourselves in. Buprenorphine. Let's talk about bup a bit, or and methadone too, and treatment in general, because people with opiate habits, you know, these are lifesavers too.
Absolutely, and that's kind of where I was going at the beginning of the conversation, that when we look at the places where Corey, the young man from the show Glee, mm-hmm. When you look at the places he went to treatment, these are not places that offer methadone or buprenorphine, both of which are shown to make people have longer, healthier lives. Corey, of course, had numerous relapses, and it absolutely should have been offered to him. I don't know what was offered to Philip Seymour Hoffman, but my guess is that this was not an option. So we see treatment programs, residential settings that say absolutely not, you're not even close to clean if you're on these medications. Two, well, if you really need them, that's okay, but you're a better person if you don't. We don't have other things that we really treat that way. I try not to say the word disease because I don't really know what it is, but we do know people live longer, healthier lives if they have had some relapses and they are now on methadone or buprenorphine.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, this is, I'm going to step outside the treatment regimen too, that, you know, we've known people who have bup prescriptions, don't necessarily take the bup all the time, but when they find themselves in a situation where they feel themselves fragile, they're going to use, they don't want to, they're a bit nervous, they'll take a pill. And there's sort of a certain amount of off-label use that should not... I mean, we tend to, like, think of that as a misuse of the drug, when actually it's a very protective, thoughtful, healthy use of self-protection and using the medication in a way that wasn't actually prescribed, but actually can save their lives.
Well, I've prescribed it that way, although I don't necessarily write it on the label. But I've had great discussions with people, one that wanted to use it just during the weekdays and get high on weekends, and the treatment people would be happy because he eventually evolved away from that. Mm-hmm. Others that use it just protectively occasionally. Right now we're in a situation where people are getting less and less access to their prescription opioids, and they're going out in the streets. And I would much rather have people that are anxious just to get over withdrawal stumble across buprenorphine than stumble across heroin. Mm-hmm. But we have the barriers to getting buprenorphine much higher than the barriers to getting OxyContin at this point.
Yeah. So basically, let's just wrap this up. And what would we like to see? Education. We want an awareness and a consciousness around overdose at every opportunity. We need access to naloxone.
This is a moment to raise awareness about naloxone, about buprenorphine and methadone, in a way that's sustainable, and we can call it in the memory of Philip Seymour Hoffman if we wish to. But we should use this moment of sadness, a moment where we've got fentanyl back into the heroin supply, to make some long-term changes, mm-hmm. rather than to be sad and excited for a period of time, and then everything goes back to the huge number of deaths that we're having anyway. In New York, we currently have a bill allowing non-medical people, so I'm trying to get myself out of a job, non-medical people to train and distribute naloxone to people, which will bring it to so many more settings like as it is in Massachusetts. Right now, there's drug treatment settings without doctors. Getting to parents is difficult. Needle exchanges can't get it out. So I hope that this life-saving bill is pushed along a little bit by these sad times that we're having.
Mm-hmm. And so part of the new bill is we need more access to buprenorphine, access to drug treatment. We need drug treatment programs to do some of the education for the people coming in. We need to continue this dialogue so that we can undo some of the stigma. But we also need leadership, and it's, you know, I struck by the difference between the response from Hollywood around HIV and also struck by the actual similarities between the president's actions under AIDS, around AIDS, and the president's action around overdose, because the Hollywood community actually was very responsive around AIDS because everyone was dying, and they seem much less responsive or creative around overdose deaths amongst celebrity actors and actresses and performers, and Hollywood needs to step up and do something about it. And Ronald Reagan didn't mention AIDS, and it took a while for the presidential office to actually respond to this. I don't think we have heard anything from President Obama to acknowledge that this is a problem that's affecting Americans across all stripes and regions of the country, and it's time that there is actually some kind of presidential response and directive and leadership saying, you know, this is something that affects everyone, let's do something about it. Anyway, in honor of Philip Seymour Hoffman, we thank you for everything you've done. Sad to see you go. And let's hope that your sad death can actually save some other people's lives. Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you, Alan.